Chapter 8. Hearing a car parking at the curb outside the house, Lydia Ferguson went to the window and looked down. She said,
"There is that disgusting, nauseating man again, that Al."
"Good," the old man said. Propped up on the couch in the living room, he had been thinking to himself that it would be nice to have company. He was still depressed. He did not feel strong, nor able to get dressed. He had on his bathrobe, and Lydia had served him his dinner there instead of at the table.
"I won't let him in,"
Lydia said. "Let him in," he said. He could hear Al coming up the front steps. "We can have a beer. Go get some beer. He had to go right away before." The doorbell sounded. Lydia said,
"I will not open or unlock the door. Did you know I have it locked? I have the chain in place."
It did not surprise him. Getting heavily to his feet, he made his way step by step across the living room. She watched him as he got closer and closer to the front door. It took him a long time, but at last he made it. He unlatched the chain and turned the doorknob.
"Hi," Al said. "Glad to see you up."
"We heard you park," the old man said, holding the door open. "Excuse me if I go sit down again."
Al entered the house and followed him back across the living room. Now there was no sign of Lydia. She had disappeared. The old man heard a door close somewhere, probably her bedroom door. It was just as well, seeing how she felt about Al.
"It's nice in here," Al said.
He seemed more tense than usual. He stood with his hands stuck in the pockets of his cloth jacket, grinning in the harsh, humorless manner that the old man knew so well. Behind his glasses, his eyes gleamed.
"Sit down," Ferguson said. "Your wife didn't come along. I guess she's still sore at me."
Al seated himself across from him.
"I'm buying a new garage," the old man said.
After a moment, Al began to laugh.
"I mean it," the old man said.
"I know you mean it,"
Al said.
"You surprised?" "You are."
"Sure," Al said. "When did this happen? Today?"
"I went up and looked at it today," the old man said. "It's over in Marin County. I got a hot tip, so I went over there. There's a lot of big financiers involved in it. You ever heard of Achilles Bradford? He's the big gun behind it, though. They have millions involved."
Al said,
"Involved in what? I don't get it."
He had lost his grin. He seemed to be bewildered.
"In a shopping center," the old man said.
"It's called Gardens."
For the life of him, he could not remember the name. It had escaped him.
"Marin Gardens," he said. "One of those tracks along the highway."
He ceased. The talking had made him pant. He sat getting back his wind, rubbing his chest with his hand. Al saw the motion, the care with which he explored and touched himself. The old man moved his hand away and laid it down on the arm of the couch.
"I'll be darned," Al said in a slow voice.
"I don't do any work," the old man said. "Any physical work. Only supervising."
Al nodded.
"What do you think?" the old man said.
"Sounds fine," Al said.
"It's just what I've been looking for," the old man said. "It's as new as tomorrow."
That was how he thought of it. He had come across that expression, and it fitted perfectly.
"It's part of the atomic world," he said. "You know, modern. Everything modern."
Again he ceased talking and merely sat.
"Fine,"
Al said.
"I'm really on the in," the old man said again. "This is the inside. I have people working for me in contacts. This is something nobody knows about. This opportunity. I didn't even tell Lydia."
"I see," Al said.
"You ought to get something like this," the old man said.
It takes money.
Sure. The old man said, I have to put up something like $45,000.
Al's face showed deep reaction. He was impressed.
A lot, the old man said, smiling. Plenty of dough. I got $35,000 from the garage, then $10,000 I have already in stocks and bonds, savings account.
Al said, you're putting up everything on this?
You better watch your step. I'm watching my step, he said.
You have legal advice?
Sure, the old man said. Listen, you know who's going to deal with Bradford for me?
He had been thinking it over, and he had made up his mind.
Boris doesn't know anything about this kind of stuff, he said. It takes an expert.
Boris is your lawyer.
That's right.
Breathing heavily, the old man said,
Harmon is going to represent me and deal with the big boys.
Al said, Chris Harmon? The dirty record man?
Yes, the old man said. He drives the 58 Cadillac. He owns that record place, Teach Records. I told you about him.
The motherfucker is a crook, Al said.
No, the old man said. The hell? He is. What do you know? How do you know?
He felt his pulse labor. His body labored.
Listen, you don't know him. I know him for almost 6 years. We're both businessmen.
He put you onto this? Al said. He wants your money.
You don't know, the old man said. What do you know? How much have you amassed? Nothing.
His voice escaped him. It shook and faded. Clearing his throat, he said,
A bunch of old wrecks.
Listen, Al said in a low voice, that guy is a crook. I know he is. He probably owns this place, this gardens. Everybody knows it, that he's a crook.
Who?
Mrs. Lane, the realtor? Mrs. Lane. The realtor. The old man sat up, saying,
That colored realtor?
Al nodded.
A colored pal of yours, that's how you know?
That's right, Al said. You talk to her. Call her. The old man said,
When do I call a colored and ask advice?
Now, Al said. By degrees, his face flushed.
I don't listen to colored,
the old man said. You listen to that fancy-dressed crook because he's got a Cadillac. They were both silent, facing each other, both breathing through their mouths.
I don't need your advice,
the old man said. You sure do. You're getting senile. The old man could think of nothing to say. You must have fallen on your head, Al said. On your goddamn head. Call your lawyer and tell him you're being swindled by a crook. Call a district attorney. I'll call a district attorney the first thing tomorrow.
You keep out of it, the old man said as loudly as he could. Mind your own business.
Suddenly, there was Lydia in the room. Neither of them had noticed her come in. They both turned their heads at the same moment. Lydia said,
What's this? About the crook swindling you out of your money?
She moved toward the old man, her eyes black and shining.
What does Mr. Miller mean? Why didn't you say you invested your money from the garage at this place, which you don't even know the name of?
It's my business, the old man said.
He did not look at either of them. He stared down at the floor. No one spoke. To Lydia, Al said, This guy's a con man. I know he is. Going to the telephone, Lydia reached down and lifted up the receiver. Holding it to Al, she said,
You call this man, whatever his name is, and tell him there is no intention by my husband. He does not want to go into this.
Sure, Al said. He started towards the phone. But it wouldn't mean anything, he said. What I say?
Then you say, Lydia said to the old man, You call him and tell him now. You have nothing in writing, do you? You did not go and sign anything, did you? I know not. I know in my heart that God did not permit you to go ahead. I have that faith.
At last he said, No, I didn't.
Thank God in the heavens above us, Lydia said. As Schiller says, it is an ode to the joy of the Heavenly Father beyond the band of stars.
Her eyes sparkled with relief and happiness. The old man said, I'm going to see him tomorrow.
No, you are not,
she said. Al said, there's no problem. All you have to do is get hold of the district attorney and show your husband that this Harmon is involved in this real estate venture, this shopping center he wants Jim to invest in. The old man said,
of course he's involved in it. Otherwise, how would he know about it?
I mean, there's a connection between him and Bradford, Al said, the guy who you're going to have Harmon represent you with.
If there wasn't a connection, the old man said, how would Harmon have known about it?
Excitedly, he said,
that's the whole point. I know he's connected. That's the point.
Al said, I mean financially connected. This shopping center is financially his.
Then he really believes in it, the old man said. If he's willing to put up his own money, that proves he thinks it's reliable. He let me in on a good investment, and he invested in it himself. Of course he did. You don't know anything. You don't know nothing about this thing. You keep out of it.
He waved his hands at both Al Miller and Lydia.
You keep out of it, you women and boys. This is for me. What I say goes.
Neither of them were smiling at him now. Al's bitter grin was gone, and Lydia's glassy, fixed Greek smile was gone, too. Al had begun to look depressed. He scraped his shoe against the floor and fingered the edge of his jacket. He began zipping and unzipping his jacket. It seemed to the old man that Lydia had begun to draw away. Her face was blank, as if she could no longer bear the situation. It was too much for her. And seeing that, he felt triumph. He felt the victory.
Listen, he said. Neither of you ever even seen it. So what do you know about it? Did you go over to Marin County?
They did not answer.
Just me, he said. You're talking about something you never even saw.
To Lydia, he shouted,
and you never met Mr. Harmon either, so you don't know anything at all.
They gazed back without answering. He had the floor.
You better come take a look at it, the old man said to Al. You drive over there and take a look.
Hell, Al said, I don't want to see it. I'm just giving you advice, my advice.
Sure, the old man said, just advice. You won't go look. You know, if you see it, you'll admit you're wrong.
He wheezed with exultation. He had them, both of them.
I've been in business a long time, a lot longer than you. You're just a bum who sits around. You know what you do? You...
He broke off. I sell used cars, Al said in a wooden tone.
Too colored,
the old man said. Al was silent.
And that's all you'll ever be,
the old man said. I got a couple of irons in the fire, Al said.
At least you're not crazy, the old man said, laughing. Isn't that right?
Al glanced up at him.
Like me,
the old man said. Al shrugged.
You can come and visit me while I'm sitting up there, the old man said. In my new auto garage with the mechanics, everything's spick and span.
Okay, Al said. He seemed to have no energy now. No more willingness to fight. Lydia slipped from the room, back probably to the kitchen or her bedroom. Anyhow, she was gone. Only the two of them remained.
Off to a seminar,
the old man said.
What?
Al murmured.
Off to class.
Al said, well, I better get going.
See you,
the old man said. His hands in his pockets, Al moved off toward the hall and the front door.
Don't look so depressed, the old man called after him. Cheer up!
Sure, Al said, turning. Lots of luck, he said.
Same to you,
the old man said. Al opened the front door. He hesitated, started to speak, and then shut the door after him. Presently, the old man heard the front door open again, stealthily. "She's going after him," he said to himself. At that, he laughed with delight. Sitting on his couch in his bathrobe, he laughed to himself, thinking of Lydia and Al conferring in secret outside on the front porch, trying to figure out how to do something, find some way to stop him. As Al Miller opened the door of his car, he heard a voice behind him. Lydia Ferguson came hurrying down the steps and across the sidewalk.
"Listen, Mr. Miller," she said. "Just a moment so that I can talk to you."
He seated himself behind the wheel and waited.
"I depend on you,"
she said, her black eyes fixed on him.
"Hell," he said, "I can't do anything."
He felt anger and futility. "Do it yourself."
"He would never have told me anything," she said. "He never said a word, only about his fall. He would go on and give his money away to the crook with no word to me, ever, and leave me with nothing. That is how he feels about me."
Al closed the car door, started up the motor, and drove away. "Why the hell did I go over there?" he asked himself. "Why didn't I stay home? They're both nuts," he said to himself. "How am I going to get out of it? I have my own problems. Let them take care of theirs. I don't have the time. I can't even solve my own problems. I can't even get anywhere with them. And they're really simple. All I need to do is find another location for Al's motor sales." And then another thought came up from deep inside him. He had not been aware of it, but it had been there nonetheless. "I hope he does get swindled," he thought. "I hope Harmon takes him for everything he has. It's exactly what he deserves, what the two of them, him and that crazy Greek wife, deserve. What I ought to do is find some way to swindle him myself." That was it. That was really it. He had worked with Jim Ferguson for years, and surely if anyone deserved to get the money, it was he, Al Miller, not some well-to-do customer driving a Cadillac who knew the old man only as the guy who greased his cars. "I know him better than anyone," Al said to himself. "I'm his best friend. Why does it go to Harmon and not me?" He thought, "But if I tried to swindle the money from the old man, I'd foul it up and land in jail. There's no use even trying to. I can't swindle the old man or blackmail Harmon. I just don't have the talent. Why can't I be like him?" he asked himself. "I'm a failure, and Chris Harmon is what I ought to be. He's everything I am not." But he wondered, "How do you get to be like that?" There was no easy way. As he drove along the street, Al Miller sorted through every possible way. How did a person like himself become a person like Chris Harmon? It was a complete mystery to him. A riddle. "No wonder everyone looks down on me," he thought. "What I'll do," he decided, "is go by Harmon's house. And when he comes to the door, I'll tell him I want to go work for him. I'd like to be a dirty record salesman. I'll tell him that. He can find something for me. If not that, then something else. I can repair the pressers that make records. Or I can work at his house on his cars. He doesn't have a mechanic now. I can devote all my time to his Cadillac and his Mercedes-Benz, polishing them and greasing them and aligning the front ends. What I ought to do," he thought, "is to show some real ambition and make up something really good. I could tell him, for instance, that I have a mystical ability, that I can heal sick cars or sick record pressers. It's done by a laying on of hands or by singing. Something that'll really attract his attention. Isn't that how the great Americans in the past made it? They all had a flair.
When they were, say, 19 years old, they got into Andrew Carnegie's office for 1 minute, and they told him they never saved string, or that they charged $25 an hour for the time. That did the trick. I have to get it exactly right, he told himself. I have to think until I come up with the really terrific new idea that will swing it. Anything less and I am doomed. I'll go on like I am and never be anything more than I am. This is my chance to break out and be something. My whole life, he told himself, my whole future depends on it. Can I do it? I have to. I owe it to Julie and to myself. In fact, to my family. I can't wait any longer. I can't go on drifting like this. This is opportunity knocking, this guy Chris Harmon. This is the way it's been set up, and if I ignore it, I'll never be given another chance. That's the way it is. That's the way it always is. Then something else occurred to him. I think I'm out of my mind, he thought. That whole business in there, that argument with the old man, drove me crazy. I'm out of my skull. And yet there was something in the idea. What would I be like after working around Chris Harmon for a while? He asked himself. He might give me something really good. Probably he's got his hands into so many enterprises that he's got plenty of jobs to dole out. He probably employs hundreds of people. In fact, he thought, Harmon's probably hiring and firing all day long. Should I call the district attorney and report Harmon is a crook? Or should I try to blackmail him for trying to swindle the old man? Or should I show up at his house or his place of business and try to talk him into hiring me? Or should I just go home and go to bed with my wife and get up the next morning and go to work at Al's Motor Sales? It was a hard question to answer. He could not make it out, try as he might. What I need is a drink, he said to himself. Ahead, the green and yellow lights of a bar could be seen. A bar he had never been to, but still a real bar, one that had a permit to sell wine and beer. So he parked the car and got out and crossed over to the other side of the street and went into the bar. That whole argument really shook me, he said to himself as he pushed past people and up to the bartender to order his drink. Finding out about Harmon swindling the old man and then having him laugh at me and insult me because I told him the truth. Too much. That's what I get for trying to wise him up, he realized. That's my reward for breaking the news to him. He doesn't want to hear it, so I get the blame. Ham's beer, he said to the bartender. Poor sick old nut, he thought. Wrapped up in his bathrobe and his slippers on his feet, watching TV for all he's worth, what's going to become of him? Maybe he'll have a heart attack and die, or another heart attack. Maybe he's dying now. Maybe he had a stroke and part of his brain isn't functioning. It certainly could be that. But he's always been that way, Al realized. He's no different, only more determined, the stupid old fart. And then a terrible thought came to him, worse than any of the others. Suppose Mrs. Lane was just trying to keep me in the market, he thought, trying to keep me from going into business with someone who already has all the real estate he can use. Suppose what she said about Harmon was just a sales pitch to keep me on the ropes. That's a really smart woman, he realized. She can wind me around her finger. It's like having my mother after me back in St. Helena. Maybe I'm wrong about Harmon. Maybe he isn't trying to swindle the old man after all. My God, maybe I told the old man wrong. Maybe he's right about me, and my colored friends, and all the rest. He drank his Ham's beer and ordered another. He stayed at the bar far into the late evening, drinking by himself, thinking it all over, admitting to himself again and again, it always seemed to be there, that he absolutely lacked the ability to see how things really stood. It seemed to be a major defect in him, and it continued to stare him in the face the more he thought about it.
The defect did not go away. It was real. It was ruining his life. And what could he do about it? Several hours later, he thought he had the answer. As best he could, he made his way across the bar to the phone booth. There, he looked up Mrs. Lane's home phone number, put in a dime, and dialed. When she answered, he said,
"Hello there. This is Mr. Chris Harmon. Why are you telling lies about me? What do you have against me?"
There are a lot more he had intended to say, but at that point Mrs. Lane interrupted him, more with a giggle than with her sentence.
"What are you doing, Mr. Miller?" she went on giggling. "I know your voice. You can't fool me. Sound like you out somewhere celebrating."
"I wouldn't swindle that old man," he said. "He's kept my cars running for years. You must be out of your mind. I ought to hire a lawyer and sue you. How am I going to keep my cars running now he's selling his garage? You ought to feel sorry for me instead of persecuting me."
"You mean Mr. Ferguson?" Mrs. Lane said. "You talking about him?"
"You're against me," Al said.
Mrs. Lane said,
"I never heard anybody carry on so. Where you at?"
"I'm at the 41 Club," he said,
holding up the package of matches the bartender had given him,
"on Grove Street. They cater to only the best of trade."
Giggling, Mrs. Lane said,
"You better go home, Mr. Miller, and let your wife put you to bed."
"Why don't you come down here and I'll buy you a beer," he said to Mrs. Lane. "Bring your husband if you have one. If you don't, bring him anyhow."
"You really crazy," Mrs. Lane said. "You go home, you hear me? You go home."
"I hear you," he said.
He hung up the phone, left the bar, looked around until he had found his car, got into it, and went home.